All right, welcome back in the third hour of the radio program. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. We're on YouTube, the Odyssey app, 105.1 FM, 1080 AM. There is no dirt. I know. I'm sad, too. Old Andy Dierte is out today. Claims he'll be back tomorrow. Swag claims he'll be back tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see about all this claiming going on.
Could have the gang all back together tomorrow.
We could, or it could be the Brandon show again.
Hey, man, I just need Swag to be here tomorrow because, as I said earlier. No, well, that, and as I said earlier, I got a Blazer game to be at tomorrow night.
This shift at the Blazer game is going to be tough.
Hell of a day tomorrow if I am doing this show and covering the game in the same day. That's a 20-hour day, basically. That's a lot.
Yeah, I was from the get. I'm like, the Sunday game for me at home seems more in my wheelhouse. If I was to go to the game tomorrow night, do the show, and not really take a nap, it'd be utterly insane to say I was up at 3:50 a.m., look at the clock when that game is over at basically 11 and go, oh, I'll be in bed by midnight. Right. How about a 21-hour day here? But yeah, I hear your point. But yeah, the gang should be back together in full tomorrow. We got the NFL draft to still discuss. We had some surprising college football news. At least not shocking, but I was like, oh. And I took it one way and then read about it and was like, okay. I don't know how that's going to resonate with people, but we'll get to that. We mentioned we had Ryan Clark on, a little quick preview of the Oregon spring game. And we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow when Dirt is back. And then obviously we got the NFL draft, so we have some local interest with three Ducks potentially drafted tonight, Pregnon, Thieneman, and Kenyon Zadig. But we'll talk a little bit about the Will Mensel commitment. So he chooses Oregon. He's the five-star number one prospect in the 27 class. And I know that feels a little far away. But it's still really big news locally for Dan Lanning to land that, right? He's in the battle with Penn State, Auburn, USC, and Lincoln Riley out here trolling Oregon on social media. Oh, a couple days later, here we go. Will Mensel, the number one quarterback, chooses Oregon. We probably should have been more up to date on Will Mensel choosing the Ducks based on this video from the 2019 NFL draft that he and his family made.
With the first overall pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select a quarterback out of the University of Oregon, Will Mensel. Mensel, you have just penciled.
And that's like a 10, 11-year-old Will Mensel at the 2019 Draft. And there's they have the NFL events. And you have there's a guy, and you can give him the name, the college you want to go to or are at, and then you can pick your team. And they'll say, the first pick. So interesting. So he chose Oregon at like 11. He's from Chandler, Arizona, which is a hotbed for talent. So he's always wanted to be a Duck. And then also, you caught the NFL team that he chose to be on the clock there because the Cowboys didn't have the number one pick in 2019. Dallas Cowboys.
They might need him in a few years.
They might need to draft a Will Mensel in 2028, 2029. Have no idea how it's all going to work out with Dak. So I'm more just kind of curious if fans get hyped for this, and you should. This is a huge deal, man. It's the number one quarterback in his class. But also, like, the amount of stock you put into the five-star number one quarterback thing just because of the recency of it all, right? Like, you Duck fan knows going through the Dante Moore battle, and like, hey, we're going to get Dante Moore. This is going to happen. And then the 11th hour, I'm going to UCLA. What? He goes to UCLA, doesn't go well. Where does he transfer? He comes back to Oregon, basically says UCLA was a disaster. Always felt like he probably should have gone to Oregon, but he went to UCLA. Got the bag. Can't blame him. But you look around the landscape of college football, DJ Lagway, see you later, right? Like, you look around, Dylan Raiola was this. He's now a backup at Oregon. It's not that five-star guys, you shouldn't get them. You shouldn't want them. We've talked a little bit about that before. But what I find really interesting is just how it's all going to work itself out, and it will work itself out. But there's a school in the Big Ten that I find fascinating that's in this right now. They're dealing with it. So Michigan fires Sharon Moore. He has the off-the-field issue with the staffer. He gets probation. He's done, right? Michigan is in now. They've gone through the cheating scandal, and now they got the Sharon Moore thing. Now, they got a title in that, to be fair to them. They've had a lot of success. But they go through multiple issues, right? Off the field issues. including losing their head coach. And you're like, well, they need a culture change. They go and get Kyle Whittingham, right? That shocks the world. Kyle Whittingham's leaving Utah. Oh, he's going to handle it to Scally. Okay, here we go. No, he's not done coaching. Michigan wants him in for cultural reasons, too. It's not just coaching. They want him to set good culture within the program. Well, they have Bryce Underwood. And Underwood was the five-star stud can't-miss guy, the guy that everybody identified and said, that's the next big quarterback. And he still very well could be, except, and something we haven't gotten to yet, is Michigan has spring game last weekend. And I didn't really watch it. I more kind of read about it because I just, what do we get from spring games, right? We don't get anything.
Not a lot.
And it's interesting reading. He didn't really play particularly well. And Lloyd Carr's grandson, so C.J. Carr is the quarterback at Notre Dame. He's got another grandson who's the brother of C.J. Carr. He's at Michigan. He's carrying legacy in the name. He played way more than Underwood, but his numbers were really impressive. And people were noting how locked in he looked, how in command he looked. And Bryce Underwood's coming in, new coach, new regime, looking a lot of the same, missing targets, not commanding things. And Whittingham, to his credit, after the game, basically was like, Bryce Underwood's our starter going forward today. You know, he kind of deaded any rumor mill stuff. But also there's a lot of buzz that if Bryce Underwood struggles and Michigan's not out the gate winning, and it's like, hey, they're, you know, let's assume their non-conference isn't incredibly difficult. Let's say they're like 4-4. There's some people that think he's going to pull Underwood if Carr really is as impressive in camp as he looked in the spring game. And there's going to be another five-star quarterback to look at. The number one quarterback. We got him. You got him. And it's just really hard, I think, to balance the five-star kid that comes in, gets the big bag, and has this expectation of playing. And Dan Lanning's kind of recipe is evidence of guys who sit, and then also multiple years of a starter. So I wonder with Will Mensel, and if this has been out there, correct the record, I just wonder how much he's willing to come in here saying, yeah, I'm probably not going to play year one. I'll redshirt, and I'll learn, and I'll grow, and I'll watch, and I'll develop, and then you go from there. And it's down the road a little bit, but it's right around the corner at the same time. So they land the number one quarterback, but it's really interesting watching college football and the way that five-star, can't-miss, quote-unquote, number one type quarterbacks end up operating at their first stops versus the history of this kind of suggests there's a transfer in order potentially down the road.
Yeah, I think the impact for getting five-star guys or top recruit, like the top guy, getting them as a quarterback in college football, it's a lot. It's not as immediate of an impact as, say, college basketball and getting a number one guy.
Yes.
So
it's not a Cam Boozer thing.
Exactly. Or an A.J. DeBonza.
Yes.
As a BYU alum talking about that and experiencing that, because we don't get the top guys out of high school ever. So that was an immediate experience because they are playing. They are the star of that one year, and then it's gone. It's like a comet. Like, they're in, they have an amazing year,
yeah,
and you know they're going number one the next year. For a quarterback in the college football, the traditional way is, like you said, you know, they come in, they redshirt the first year, they soak in all the experience and all the advice from the older guys, from the starting guys, and then they wait for their turn. Nowadays, we have these guys kind of like Bryce Underwood. They're coming in and almost, if not year one, year two, they are the guy. And all that pressure and all that money kind of weighs in on them right away in that instant. And they either, you know, thrive on it or they crumble. And so it's just a mixed bag of, all right, well, what is Mensel going to be? Is he going to be locked in and ready to go when it's his time? Or is he going to kind of fade in the pressure? And then you're looking around like, oh, well, now we're in trouble because we thought this guy was going to be the guy, and then he doesn't end up being. So it's, you know, time will tell. And that's kind of hard to be excited for, is when you get a pickup like this. It's great for recruiting, great for the school.
It's great to have the number one quarterback. He's 6'3", he's 200 pounds, he's a dual threat.
Right.
It's almost like it's more fun to say, hey, we got him because you won the recruiting battle.
Yeah.
Than it is you fully putting the stock in and saying, well, that's the quarterback of the future.
Right.
I don't know, man. History's not amazing with that. We also don't know what he's going to be in college versus the high school.
Yep.
You hope for the best.
Yeah.
But it's really a crapshoot, and I would think it's far more yesterday. Hey, look what Dan Lanning's still doing, right, man. He's still kicking ass on the recruiting trail. He's got recruits from all over the country. He's not just in pockets of Southern California and, hey, some Seattle kids. It's like it's Carolina and it's Alabama and it's Texas. It's California. It's Arizona. Like, he's spread out all throughout the country. He landed the number one quarterback. Like, yesterday, to me, was probably, I would guess, more about just winning that battle, because it's almost, it's just an off-the-field, off-season battle, mm-hmm, than it is like, this is the next him.
Right.
It's too tough to tell, I think, in the world of college football with those guys.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's a win for the program. It's a win for the coach. It's a win for that staff. And it's a win for the fan base, because now you feel a little bit more secure about, okay, well, after Dante, what's the future going to look like as far as this position and the team going
You assume
forward.
It's Raiola.
Right.
And then he comes in and he backs him up, or
yeah,
he redshirts.
Exactly. It feels like the regimes are in place. Like, you have Dante this year, you got Raiola
yep.
the next year, and now you have Mensel behind him.
Yep.
So you don't have that insecurity of coming into a spring game and say 2027, 28, and you're looking at, oh, wait, do we have a quarterback controversy here? Are we sure about this one? We were 2 years ago. How are we feel about now? Kind of being in that you know, limbo type of state.
I've always given Lanning credit, too, for the not hesitate and identify and know what he needs. Like, I wondered about Dante last year coming in, right? Like, where he was at UCLA and having to sit a year. And it's easy to conclude he's going to be amazing. It was like, for me, it was a little bit of a wait and see. And he had a great year. Like, I couldn't have been – the only thing I was right about was he wasn't a Heisman finalist. Everything else was awesome.
Right.
And so I've always given Lanning credit of, no – Bo is still my guy, and Bo comes back and has his last great year in Eugene, right? And then the next year, what does he do? Well, he doesn't go to an unproven situation. He brings in Dylan Gabriel. All right, here we go. We're just rolling this thing over. He goes Dante Moore. Dante sits the year. He gets Dante ready. What's he do this year? He brings in Dylan Raiola. Guy started multiple years for Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
He got him to come into Eugene, sit the year. You know, unless there's an injury,
right,
sit the season, and now you've got that. And then if that doesn't work out, dude, that guy just will never be – he'll never sit comfortable. He'll never fall back on the, well, I got this guy. If he sees it and he doesn't trust it, he's one of those guys that just will – he will move on. He will not hesitate. He will do what it takes to keep it humming. So,
right,
big win yesterday in Eugene as the Ducks land the number one quarterback in 2027, Will Mensel. A lot to get to in the third hour of the program. I got one more college football note. A story that came out yesterday, and I instantly had to do some research on something because of my real feelings when it was announced. We'll get to that, and then also the NFL draft is today. So we're talking about the NFL draft. We got the Magic Hat at the top of the 9 a.m. hour. Hour 3 rolls on. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan. We got the Magic Hat at the top of the hour. We got the NFL draft we're going to start diving into coming up here at the bottom. Got some good NBA games on deck. We'll get to that in the final hour as well. Nice little Thursday morning for you. It's supposed to be beautiful today. Last I checked, it was, at least. I think we're supposed to have like a run of good weather, aren't we? Let's see. Yeah.
Yeah, this weekend's supposed to be good.
Dude, all the way up until like right now, it's slated to be from today until the following Saturday.
Oh, my.
I have nothing but sun on my weather app.
Oh, beautiful.
Now,
that could change.
Bit of a magic hat thing, but can I ask you this? Do you trust the Apple weather map or weather app?
I have more faith in it than
like,
I probably
you,
should.
Do you check your local news, or do you just open the
no,
weather
app
on your
app.
Phone
have,
and say that's what it's going
to
be?
I have no measure to turn on the local news for anything.
Really?
Nah.
I mean, local
I'm
sports?
I'm a very simple person. I'm not even local sports. Sports Center is my home base if I need
wow.
sports stuff.
Wow, you just crap it all over
I,
our
I have
great
nothing
local
against local
news.
News.
That
is
here.
Probably one of the toughest markets to be in is local news. I want no part of local news. I do not watch local news.
Disrespectful.
I am a not disrespectful. I am
I'm
just
report your
a
name
simple,
to KPTV.
I am just
Coin,
a simple person.
K2. KGW. I'm going to tell them all what you're saying right now. You'll be
again,
public enemy
I
one.
Respect what they do. I just would not want to be A, doing it, or B, watching it.
Yeah, I tend to probably rely too much on that app. I'll see it and like, okay. And then sometimes it's wrong, and I'm like, wow. I don't really hold it against it. If I get a newscaster report, and they're wrong. I'm like, yo,
yeah,
you told me something that was incorrect.
Yeah. No, I think this is why widgets were invented, so we could have it right on our lock screen so that as soon as something changes, we're aware of it, because Portland weather is weird like that.
Portland weather is weird like that. Magic Hat coming up here at the top of the hour. Many of you may be, you may remember this guy.
Landy is my daddy.
Are you smoking crack?
Hell no. We ain't dead at all.
That's legend. Famous caller from the Paul Feinbaum show. He is a notorious Alabama diehard.
That don't piss you off, dude.
And Kalen DeBoer year one presented all of this audio.
Can't take the heat? Get out of the kitchen. I love the kitchen. So let's get that right. We'll send a U-Haul to your ass.
Because they didn't make the playoff. They won 9 games year one. Well, year two, they come back. They get to the SEC title game. They got bludgeoned by Georgia in that game. But they made the playoff. Then they have a crazy comeback on the road at Oklahoma. And then they get slaughtered by Indiana. And so while it hasn't been national championship dreams that Kalen DeBoer had when he left Washington for Alabama, I don't think it's been the worst, but I also think Alabama fan went from Nick Saban thinking we're going to win the title every year, and, you know, for many years did, to can't make the playoff or we're not really a true contender. Like, beating Oklahoma in the playoff is nice, it's a road win, but Oklahoma was, yeah, one of those borderline playoff teams. Well, Alabama did something yesterday that has been kind of in the works, according to Greg Byrne and some of the message board stuff. They gave Kalen DeBoer a contract extension. It's very interesting. So I see this story, this headline. I'm like, I got to read about this, dude, because my instant thought was, did he get an extension but restructure? And is some of the restructure around, you know, we can fire you. It's easier to do this, you know, how much we pay you if we fire you. And then I read about the contract and I go, well, that's definitely not the deal. They're giving him a full runway here. This is an interesting deal. So it's just a 2-year extension that adds on. Oh, you see, the 7-year extension, excuse me. So 2 extra years now runs through 2033. His annual salary is now $12.5 million. That's a $2 million raise from what it was scheduled to make. If he leaves Alabama in 27, it's a $10 million buyout, $8 million in 28, $6 million in 29. If they fire him, right, the buyout's not very big. If they fire him, Alabama owes him 90% of the remaining contract with no duty to mitigate. And so you look at Kalen DeBoer in Alabama, and he's already kind of coming in as a lightning rod. Yesterday, Alabama was like, you know what? Lightning rod no more, my man. Kurt Cignetti is the number one paid coach in college football. He makes 13.2. That 0.2 is the difference between him and Kirby Smart. So getting you one of those at Indiana is the perfect launch point to make the most money of all the coaches. Number two is Kirby at 13 flat. Number three, to get old Lane Train out of Oxford, LSU had to pony up and pay him the same amount as they pay Kirby Smart. Kirby's got 2 titles. Lane's got none. Lane's never been to a title game. And LSU's like, dude, we're beyond desperate. Let us show you how gross we are. Here's $13 million. Tied at 4 because of the extension now is Kalen DeBoer at 12.5. You know he's tied with? Ryan Day, who has a national championship. Geez. It's not that, like, giving somebody more time. He's 20-8, by the way. He's 12-4 in the SEC. But because they missed the playoff year one, and because they got beaten up by Indiana at the Rose Bowl, Bama fans in a weird spot of, like, I don't think they hate him. I also don't know if they heard this yesterday. It was, like, super stoked. My perspective would be, I still really like Kalen DeBoer. I did think it was going to be, like, year one. They made the playoff in Saban's last year in the 4-team. Now we've expanded this. Surely they'll make the 12-team playoff. It's Alabama. It's got all this talent. No, it wasn't. They lost that Oklahoma game, coincidentally. Oklahoma beat them and put an end to that run, so they finished with a 9-3 record. But extending Kalen DeBoer after 2 seasons that, by definition, are successful, but according to the fan base, feels really shaky. Very interesting development out of Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I think Alabama's still a little bit in the Saban cloud. I think
they're going to be in that for until he wins a title.
And that's just the nature of following one of these great head coaches, is that you're going to get that backlash from the fan base that expects it to stay the way it is. So, I understand the restructuring, because we're in a college football world now where it's almost like the NFL, where if you come in and you're not producing to the standard, then we're gonna find a way to make it as less impactful or less of a dent in our financial abilities to get you out if we need to. So I see both ways how this came about. But yeah, I think, you know, that target is still on his back until he gets Alabama, honestly, all the way to the mountaintop. You know, that scrutiny is going to stay there. And that's just the nature of being an Alabama head coach.
Should be noted, too, they took care of all their coaches because Nate Oates signed a contract extension as well. And that was reported a while ago that was happening, but they kind of finally made it official. So and they also, by the way, they boosted the salary pool for the assistants. Courtney Morgan is the guy who kind of runs a lot of what they're doing in recruiting and the way it's, you know, all handled. He's going to make $1.2 million a year. But it's funny to go to the Roll Tide Reddit, because you can always count on Reddit to be level-headed, which is great about Reddit. And somebody did a post on a case against the DeBoer re-signing. Huge burden for the program. If it doesn't work out, we're absolutely screwed. Now, what does that mean for them? I don't really know. Like, if they don't make the playoff this year, because the last I had seen, they're kind of in that late teens, 20s preseason thought bubble. Now, they're Alabama. They're going to have 5 stars out there. They very well could come out the gate and be 7-0. And if that's the case, you know, they're going to be like a top 6 team. But if they have any sorts of struggle and they're, God forbid, a 6-1 or a, you know, 8-2. Like, that's going to be
like last year.
Well, yeah, a little bit like that. They were kind of playing for a while there. It felt very week to week. Ty Simpson was great. Their offensive line was great. They had that win at Georgia. And you're like, here they go. But they started the season with that loss to a garbage Florida State team.
Yeah.
I mean, that ended up being just an atrocious Florida State team. And they didn't look ready for it at all. That's always been Dirt's point about DeBoer is, they have DeBoer teams largely have success. So you can't like actually argue against the results. It's the process of it is there's a lot of games that individuals might be able to look at and go, should you have won that game?
Right.
You should have lost that one and that one and that one and that one. That was a little bit of their story his last year at UW. But there are definitely some split people on the contract extension in terms of Kalen DeBoer now making the 4th most in college football. And I think the one thing going for them, if you're not in on DeBoer and you don't think DeBoer is ever going to be the guy to win a title, that's fine. Stability is a huge element of this.
Sure.
Like, if you think he's a really good coach, but not great, okay. It's easy to argue with that group. Yeah, I'd rather have the really good coach in one spot, certain he's not going anywhere unless he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
We're backing him. The staff pool is really supported. There's nothing to question here. And yeah, maybe you have a 9-3 season again. You don't make the playoffs, and people are going to bring that up, and the hot seat stuff's going to start, right? The boosters are going to have those conversations on the country club golf courses. But I think the administration and the university yesterday basically loudly said, we're not going to dabble in this. We're replacing Nick Saban. DeBoer has been 20-8 in 2 years. Let's calm down a little bit. Let's let him build this the way he needs to build it to try to win. So not shocking, because a lot of people had said this might be on the horizon, but it was more like, hey, let us show you. If we fire you, we're going to pay almost all the contract. Okay, they're all in. Kalen DeBoer's show is going nowhere in Tuscaloosa. A lot to get to. We got the Magic Hat coming up here at the top of the hour. Up next, the NFL draft. And a couple storylines around the NFL, including one, Kenyon Sadiq and how ready he is for the NFL. We know he's ready. One legend saying this about him. We'll bring that to you. We got a head coach that won't be there for one of the days of the draft because he won't admit that something happened, but I think he's basically admitting it happened. But the NFL draft is tonight. Let's dive into it next. We've got the NBA playoffs roll on tonight. And the neighborhood restaurant group poll question of the day. What will you watch more of tonight, the NBA playoffs or the NFL draft? Brandon, you said you would choose the NBA playoffs.
Yep.
Heard from other people say, give me the live sports more than the announcement of guys or Mel Kiper screaming at us. Right now, that poll result is NBA playoffs 60% over the NFL draft at 40%.
Okay.
You can vote at Dirt and Sprague. That is your Neighborhood Restaurant Group poll question of the day.
Again, if the NBA playoffs were on, say, ESPN, and I was able to multi-view the draft along with the NBA playoffs, then they'd both be on the TV. But with Amazon Prime,
you can't.
I got to pick one.
Yeah, you can't do both. Yeah. No, there's no doubt about that. That's the unfortunate nature of the first round. I haven't been anti-Amazon Prime with the playoffs or the regular season. I have found with the playoffs, it's like, kind of pain in my ass. But I will probably be watching the NFL draft on the iPad, but I'm excited that it's here. I know it's not the sexiest draft. Like, the biggest debate right now is Ty Simpson a first-round guy? And Matt Miller of ESPN, who we were supposed to have on like eight different times, but his schedule kept getting changed, he said this on ESPN Radio about Ty Simpson yesterday as we get ready to go into the draft today.
We're all assuming that the Arizona Cardinals will trade back into the draft tonight to take him. If the entire world knows that the Cardinals are going to trade back into the first round to take him and no one else is going to, if you're Arizona, do you really have to jump back in tonight to get him unless you just want to lock up that fifth-year option? So he is, outside of love, I think probably the most fascinating player tonight just because of, I think, where expectations are versus the reality. I haven't talked to a single team that says, yeah, he's our guy. We love him. We'd take him in the first round. Instead, when you talk to teams, they tell you, we think the Cardinals will probably take him. So no one's willing to claim Ty Simpson as their guy this year.
Dan Orlovsky is on television this morning basically saying if he's not a first-round quarterback, everybody else is wrong. I love the take of like, well, I'm not wrong. You're all wrong.
He's jumped on that boat.
He's all in, man. And he brings up interesting points. Like we were talking about Kalen DeBoer in Alabama. I don't think people really thought they were that legit. It was, are they top 12 team? Sure. But their run game was atrocious. Their defense was good, but like they had moments that they weren't good. I mentioned the Florida State game. They just could not get stops in that game when they needed to. And so I think because of the way the season went, a lot of it was Ty Simpson. Now, the sample size of him being a starter is not great. And the buzz going into the draft tonight, as there's a lot of things that are up in the air, is Arizona wants him bad. And if Arizona can't find a trade partner to get out of three, they might go Jeremiah Love out of the simple fact of he's really good and he'll sell tickets. They basically, the coach, the general manager, and the owner all have different opinions of why they should draft Jeremiah Love. But a lot of people are saying if they don't trade out of three, they'll go Love. And then the big intel is that they may trade at the very back end of the draft to come back in and draft Ty Simpson. I've said before, the history of guys with that few of starts is not great. I thought Ty Simpson was good. Now, his offensive line was a little problematic. So given that, like give him some credit for it. But I'm also not like overly wowed. That doesn't have to mean that he's not going to be a good quarterback. We just watched Sam Darnold have the ultimate redemption career and win the Super Bowl with Seattle. So nothing is going to be defined by where he goes. I think most of us would probably bet Arizona, which might be one of the biggest parts of the draft as the third pick, is largely a crap organization that nobody is going to trust to handle well with the quarterback. But is Ty Simpson good enough where he doesn't win it? It fizzles out. He goes to another spot. Maybe that's what Kyler Murray is going to be for Minnesota this year. He got to the playoffs once with Arizona. I'm not a big Kyler Murray guy, but the belief is he's going to Kevin O'Connell and all those weapons. And here we go, man. He's going to have a real start at this thing. Maybe that's Ty Simpson if Arizona does indeed trade back in and take him. But going into the draft, it's mainly about, is Ty Simpson going to be a first round guy? We know Mendoza. Is it going to be Bailey? Is it going to be Reese at two? And that's been a very polarizing debate. I think they're even money.
They're even.
On the odds board. So truly, people aren't really sure where to go. I think I bet Bailey, but the upside of Reese might be bigger. And then you've got Arizona at three. You got Tennessee at four. If Love doesn't get drafted by Arizona, do they go running back? Do they go Sonny Styles? There's a lot of intel and buzz that Rob Saleh really likes Sonny Styles. Matt Miller's mock draft, his last one before the draft today, and I want to get to some Kenyon Sadiq stuff here, but he's got Mendoza, Bailey, Reese. So he has Reese falling to Arizona, which, you know, I think from a competent organization standpoint, I don't trust Arizona, but if they made that pick, I'd at least go, okay. I know Walter Nolan missed some time last year, but I still like that pick. And he's got Love going to Tennessee. And then you've got the Giants, of course, who have 5 and 10. And Tyson, Jordan Tyson, the Arizona State receiver, I watched an interview he did on the NFL Network yesterday, and he was, in a roundabout way, saying he knows where he's going. He's like, yeah, have a good sense. So Arizona's not looking for a receiver. The Titans appear to be more in love with Love or Styles. And then we know the Jets are going edge rusher defensive guy. Raiders are going. Like, we just know the obvious teams. The Giants might go Jordan Tyson at 5 because they can't chance that he'll fall to them at 10, which if they can get him and then Caleb Downs falls because he's a safety and people don't want to draft safeties early, you know, we don't know how the careers are going to pan out, but saying you've got Caleb Downs and Jordan Tyson on paper, that would be a huge win. And then, of course, you've got all the other stuff of the Commanders at 7. Are they going Sonny Styles? What are the Saints going to do? Is it Carnell Tate? Seems like a pretty logical choice as maybe the first or second best receiver in the draft. So, you know, Reuben Bain is going to slip. I understand that this draft is not super sexy to people. I get that. I had the take. But as I've been reading about it and as we watch the last couple years, the defensive line depth and how vital that is. And then also you just look through the teams who were picking in the top end of the draft last year, like take New England, right? New England's up there. They go get Will Campbell. They're in the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying that's Will Campbell, obviously. Like Drake May has a big part. Vrabel, they brought in the most free agents. They spent a ton of money. I'm just saying like a lot of organizations are in this spot. Because of the way the NFL works, very likely you're going to get one, maybe two teams that are in this picking that are not going to be there next year. And so I'm in. Like, I know the quarterback thing is the sexiest part of the draft. I do agree that the NBA playoff teams playing tonight are more entertaining than sitting around for 15 minutes at a time or 10 minutes at a time. But I'm super in on seeing how this draft is going to shake out, who is going to fall, who is still going to be there. I want to get to Kenyon Sadiq. The rumor mill spot that he might fall to, Dylan Thienemann seems to have a landing spot for many people, and the Dallas Cowboys. What are the Dallas Cowboys doing? Very interesting what their press conference was yesterday. We'll get to all that coming up next on 105.1 The Fan. So, Brandon, let me ask you this. We got the Magic Hat coming up at the top of the hour. It's NFL Draft Day. Is Mike Vrabel announcing that he won't be around for the Patriots' day 3 picks because of counseling? Like, we didn't play his audio. He's admitting that he had an affair, right? Like, aren't we just basically concluding that that's the deal?
I think he's saying it without saying it.
Which is odd to me. Like, I don't need you to be Kobe and be at a table. Like, I did not force myself on her. You know, I don't necessarily need that. I just find it all very... Diana Rossini's disappeared. She's quit.
Yep.
There's a lot of intel that her husband hired a PI, and that's how the photo circulated and got put to the New York Post. So, you know, that's not going well. And then you got Vrabel over here. They both denied it from the get. Now they're like, ah. And now he's like, I have to seek counseling, and I've apologized and talked to my wife and my children, and I won't be there for a day. It's just the whole thing is super odd.
I know.
Super bizarre.
It's just escalated very quickly. And I think a lot of what he just said it in the most professional way possible. He's like, okay, I need to take care of myself. If a player came to me in this situation, and of course not saying what the situation is, but I would give him the same advice.
He had the affair.
Care of myself.
what are we doing here?
It's just that professional, I'm going to talk around it without actually saying
it. I don't think he's ever going to mention, he's going to say like, oh, you know, I went through that time in my life and I had struggles, and they're never going to talk about it. No. And I think largely it's because also Rossini's involved in this, and he's probably doing her right in some ways because of legality reasons of divorce and all that stuff. Like, you got to be careful what you say out loud.
Yeah.
It's just a very odd shadow cast upon New England as they go into the draft.
Which is unfortunate because, you're coming off a great year last year, and now you have all this in the offseason. And, you know, maybe draft picks tonight along with A.J. Brown coming in June will kind of put this all to the side for the short term.
Yeah.
It's definitely casting a large cloud over New England, especially on a draft weekend.
Yep.
It's just not a good look.
Yeah. So New England's going to be dealing with that over the weekend. He won't be there for day three. Stephen Jones, the future owner of the Cowboys, they had a press conference yesterday. Did you see Jerry Jones see Bill Clinton get up, trip on the stage, walking over to him, and then just be like, hey, it's the president. Then him and Bill chop it up. And then he just left. He just left the press conference with Bill Clinton, because I guess that's what you do when you see Bill Clinton. And Stephen Jones talking about George Pickens, who's going to be playing on the tag if he plays. He hasn't signed that tag yet. They've tagged George Pickens. And Stephen Jones just saying straight up, we're not paying George Pickens.
Let's start with the fact it's not easy, you know, having two receivers being paid top of the market. I mean, that's obviously a stretch, especially when you have other great players on your team. A quarterback that's been here being the highest paid player in this league for many years now. Certainly, that's part of it. The other thing is the newness of George being here. And I think George has just done an amazing job. I mean, he's exceeded all expectations. I think anybody, or we wouldn't have gotten him for a third-round pick. So that's a plus. And, you know, a lot of these things, they make their way toward a long-term deal. But that's the biggest part of it. Between the business and the newness of it, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, no chance. I will be surprised if they end up giving him the extension. He hasn't even signed it. And by the way, I think I found out his agent's the same agent as Micah Parsons.
Oh.
So how'd that go? Yeah, you know what I mean? Right. That relationship.
We're going to do this dance again?
We're mad at Tommy Two Nickels and his reputation with agents. Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones line one with some agents around the National Football League. So clearly they're trying to tag Pickens. They might draft a guy. They've got two picks. They got 12 and 20 at least going in. That's kind of some of the buzz of like George Pickens, the future of it, maybe a draft. One of the guys who falls to you at 12, whoever that ends up being. Maybe Carnell Tate falls to you for whatever reason. So
right.
Have to wait and see on that one. Greg Olsen was asked about Kenyon Sadiq, and he just talked about how guys are more ready for the NFL, especially at that position.
I think it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, right? So much of this is fit. What type of offense are they going to run? What kind of role do they see him playing? Is his hand on the ground? Is he attached to the formation? Is he playing more out in space? So many of those factors play into the success immediately that we see from young tight ends. But if there's one thing that's been clear, when I first came into the league, there was an understanding that tight ends were going to take a couple of years to develop before they really became prominent players. I think we've seen over the last couple draft cycles, you know, the Brock Bowers of the world, these highly, highly talented tight ends that come out of college, highly accomplished, the ability to make the NFL transition seems to have gotten easier. And I think a big part of that is teams understand a lot more how to use them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think guys coming back to college for more money and then going to the draft is going to help as development goes on. If Sadiq does not get picked by the Ravens, a lot of people think he's destined to go to Carolina at 19. And maybe you like that pick for him. I hope he goes to Baltimore because I'm not super high on the Panthers, mainly because their quarterback is 5'3". Dylan Thienemann is rumored to be all but a certainty for Minnesota. We know how that stuff goes. Could just be he ends up getting picked by the Cowboys or whatever. But a lot of people really like him in that Harrison Smith role. That Minnesota is sitting at 18. And so we'll have to wait and see. Pregnon could be back in first round. Maybe look at a Houston-like type team. I'm trying to see where he was on Miller's mock. He has where did he have him? You know what? That's right. He didn't have him. So I was probably looking at a different mock. He had Pregnon going to like a Houston, if Houston stays in the first round. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens. Three Oregon Ducks. NFL draft is here. Not sexy going in. Could be sexy after watching and seeing the results of it all play out. We got a loaded final hour of the show. And we're going to kick it off with the Magic Hat. Hour 4, Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.